Everybody, once again to a Sopranos podcast. As always, my name is Joe Spellman, and this is
David Fiedernick,
and this is
Paul Gullius,
and we're talking episode season 2, episode 13, Funhouse.
Nailed it!
Yeah,
I'm proud of you, man. I got it right this time.
Proud you remembered the episode we're covering on our Sopranos podcast.
Hey, you know, it's a 50-50 shot, whether I do or not.
That's true.
Our illustrious guest today is none other than Sean Clemens.
Oh, go on. Get out of here, guys. Thanks for having me. So happy to be a part of it. So this is you guys have been doing this for a year, and you're on, like, the 26th episode?
Yeah, that's right.
Clearly, we're right on top of it.
I love that you're taking your time. I hate when people rush through these recaps and they're doing an episode every week.
Why?
Like, you know, the show took a break between seasons.
Yeah.
It took several years sometimes, yeah.
We can't blow our load because this is all we have. So
we're hoping,
we got to really savor it.
Right. We're hoping, too, people, like, you know, they'll come in on, like, season 3, which we're going to be starting next week, and then you know, they'll go back and listen to the other podcasts, just like a lot of people have watched The Sopranos. You
know? Right, yeah. Now is the perfect time to go back and listen to every episode of A Sopranos Podcast.
Yeah, we had Gabrus, we had DC, mm-hmm. we had Haley Honig,
we had Joe's neighbor, we've had many illustrious guests.
Oh, shit, you got Joe's neighbor on?
Yeah.
I didn't realize I was in such prestigious company.
I mean, you're following his episode, so don't fuck it up.
We had Devil Corgan, you know, he was always the
worst episode we've had.
No, I used to watch Sopranos at Devlin's house every week.
Right.
Soprantourage night every Sunday.
Right. Was there anybody else there that we could get on the podcast or?
Shit. Well, Rogers was there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
we could get him. We could get. There's plenty of other people.
Cool.
Yeah, Sean, do you have any other people we could have on the podcast, like instead of you? Or?
Oh, I'll just forward you my whole like contact list from my phone.
That's so helpful, man. Thanks.
Perfect.
There's some big ones in there. Some good stuff.
Cool.
People I don't actually communicate with, but I have their number. We get something good
just
going.
Just text them right now. Just say hey.
Hey, you want to come on the Sopranos podcast right now?
Adam Scott, send them the Zoom. Like Adam Scott would Zoom be great for you guys.
Yeah, oh,
shit. Perfect,
dude. Yeah, see what he's up to. Send him the Zoom link.
There. I feel like there's a couple questions that are linked to Sopranos that, or you've maybe worked with somebody who's on it. I don't know if we want to get into it yet, but what are we gonna start with?
What do you mean? You want to get into that?
Right, so didn't you work with Tony Sirico?
I worked with Paulie Walnuts, and I actually went down to set. I hung out with him for like a lot of that day. I was the writer on set. He sat next to me. I have a funny picture from set of like I'm like all smiles and I'm taking a photo with him, and he's got like the nastiest look on his face. He's just like, oh, this fucking kid wants a picture of me. But his manager was a real character and told me stories about him. Like, I mean, you guys may have gone over his origin, but it sounded like he was like in league with a bunch of real gangsters.
Yeah,
like,
he did time.
He was hanging out at some whatever, like a deli or a shop that they all came in and out of, and he was like a little bit like Goodfellas style kind of errand boy for them, and then got in the mix, and then ended up going away, and was like the character in the group. Like he was kind of like the class clown of the fucking mobsters he knew, and so somehow got connected to this manager. The manager also had some crazy stories about his other rep was some actor who had been dating Julia Roberts. He was like Julia Roberts' boyfriend, but then Julia, he claims like that Kiefer Sutherland like got her hooked on drugs so that she would date him instead. Like, he had a really wild story. It was an interesting day on set watching Paulie Walnuts not remember lines.
Yeah.
In the way that you would expect a professional actor to. He would just be like, "What is it? Ah, Jesus Christ." You'd get like one sentence at a time out of him. But he's got the look.
Not what you expect from the Juilliard trained Tony Sirico. That's true.
What show is that?
That was on The Grindr. And so The Grindr had like a show within the show. Rob Lowe's character used to be on a like hour-long drama called The Grindr, and it was like something where he was the lawyer for Tony Sirico, who was like wrongfully imprisoned or something. They had this like through the, you know, glass like phone prison visit scene that was really intense.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Hey. Cool.
Paulie Walnuts.
I mean, there's another story that I remember about you.
Hit me with it.
You had an audition with a character who's on
Sopranos. This guy is this
it's a funny story.
So I went in for a commercial audition in New York, and I'll do it just because I do like to do his voice. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, at the beginning commercial audition that you slate your name, so you'd be like, "Hey, I'm Sean Clements, I'm 6'1" or whatever, and then they go, so they were like, there was like three of us in the room, and it was like, "Hey, I'm Rick Stansley, and I'm Sean Clements," and then it came time for this guy's name. He really wound up and went, "Lou Martini Jr." And like just put so much into it. And I was like, "Fuck, Lou Martini Jr.? Like, what a name." And I had to look him up as soon as I got home. And turns out he's like a Sopranos.
Yeah. He played.
He followed that by going, I'm terrible at this.
Yeah.
He played Johnny Sack's brother-in-law.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Brother-in-law. The LensCrafters guy.
The coffee with the chicory.
Coffee with the fucking chicory. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That was a long time ago. That's that story always makes me laugh. Cool.
Let's get into the app discussion. We're doing the season finale. We finally reached it of season 2. Originally aired April 9th, 2000. Over 20 years ago.
Let me ask you real quick. Sean and Joe, you guys were class of 2000, correct?
Yes, we went to high school together, and we were the class of 2000.
And this episode ends with the graduating class of 2000. Did that?
Oh shit!
Did that really strike home for you?
That stirred up some memories that I thought I put away a long time ago, David.
You're Y2K. Reminded whenever you see my face of those memories.
Was this supposed to be a 20-year reunion for you guys?
Probably.
Oh shit!
There was a. If you're not familiar with the Facebook page, Sean.
Oh, there was a 20-year reunion.
Yeah. It's the topic of conversation in my WhatsApp thread with the guys from Cheshire.
Oh, I got it. Can you send me like screenshots or anything, because I deleted my Facebook?
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Smart.
They rescheduled it, obviously.
Thank God.
Some people pushing for it, where there's some people being like,
No. It's not even that great, really. But it was like months ago, there was a lot of discussion on what the venue was gonna be and how much people were gonna charge or whatever. I'm in the group, but I just watched the conversation.
Our Kenya reunion got like scrapped at the last minute, right? Like, they couldn't get it together.
It got scrapped too. Damn.
Yeah.
Not for COVID or anything. It was just literally like not enough people RSVP'd. And so that like there was like a dozen people went to the Vic house or some shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. If people aren't showing up for the 10-year, I don't think that bodes well for the 20-year. Mm-hmm. But
So this is the infamous Funhouse episode where Tony spends most of the episode in and out of like fever dreams. Sean, when was the last time you watched this episode? Or did you watch it before the ep tonight or what?
I watched it 2 days ago, but it was funny because I watched this show when it aired. Like, I remember we had HBO Flex, and my parents were usually up on like what the new show is, and we're like, we're watching The Sopranos. So I did watch these two seasons when they aired, but I was in high school. Right. I mean, I was whatever, 17. So I didn't have really vivid memories of it. I haven't rewatched the show. I always say like, I got to rewatch the whole thing, but I haven't really taken the time to do it, but looking through some episodes stick out so much totally remember them. And this was one of them, like the fish talking to him and like all, like there's a bunch of stuff that I was like, I remember watching this, like this one. And then there's whole episodes where I read the description. I'm like, I don't even know. Like I, because there are like sort of treading water, like it's a show that takes its time.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But this was a big one, obviously. It's a season finale. Yep. He like has to kill one of his best friends.
Yep.
And it's one of the famous Dream episodes too, which in my memory, they didn't start doing until later. Like,
right.
I always thought like, oh yeah, around season four, like they started doing all these Dream episodes with like Annette Bening or whatever. But it's like, no. I guess it was always about, you know, this guy's subconscious and stuff. And I created that narrative. Like they were pretty in on it right away. Yeah. So I thought it was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple Dreams in the first season, but this is really the first instance of them using it. And like also
Dream
like to like push plot forward. Right. Like it's not just a glimpse into Tony's psyche. It ends up manifesting in like a big plot point in the death of Pussy. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, the Dream sequences have split the fan base. You got your people who just want to see people fucking whacked. And then you have the people who appreciate the sort of like the psychology aspect of it. I'm pretty sure everybody on the podcast here kind of falls into that group.
No.
Yeah, I definitely like that.
Yeah.
I like the Dream sequences, but when people get whacked in them.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
shit.
That's the only time.
You're all about that.
That's a new category.
Yeah, I'm twisted.
Yo, you sick
fuck. Yeah, you're real sick.
This has everything. Like, this is like one of the episodes that balances like all the things that like people love about it.
Right.
The Dream sequences, your killings, your sex, your like Tony smoking a cigar, you know, all the checks all the boxes.
Yeah. That's definitely
like a box. Just funny shit. The scene with him and Artie talking, like where Artie's like insisting that he didn't get food poisoning from his restaurant is
so
like
funny. So good.
One of the funniest. I was just like, God, yeah, they did. I mean, they really.
John Ventimiglia just kills comedy.
Yeah, when he's talking to Pussy and like he's just like, oh, so it was like obviously not the shellfish, okay.
He's like, you get anything? And then he hears him say a little diarrhea, and he turns and makes a face. He's like, there's nothing.
A little, a touch.
So good. That's actually probably the biggest question of this episode. What fucking gave Tony? Is it determined, do you think? Within the context of the episode, did they ever?
Isn't it implied? They really kind of spell it out for you when you like rewatch it a bunch of times with the fish. It's like fish. We see the fish like being like the close up of the fish like moving through the restaurant, and then you see the fish is on the table. Like,
yeah, but
that
see,
they're eating
but,
at. But like, then I, isn't that isn't it like? I feel like more so this time, like rewatching it. It felt a little more heavy-handed that it's like, it's the fish
it's the
that's
fish.
Making it.
See, I got the opposite. Because
I got the opposite,
because,
too.
Yeah, because if Pussy did have a touch of diarrhea and they both shared the muscles, then that seems to me like that was the culprit. They didn't share plates they shared the papadoms.
Also, I guess you could also argue like maybe Puss had a couple muscles and Tony finished the muscles.
right.
I mean, maybe one muscle was bad and like, you know, he just got that one bad muscle.
I don't know.
Maybe.
You know,
I thought it
sounds like it's the
you
diarrhea.
Guys are just I mean you guys are just trying to be too PC and not get canceled.
No.
Or and not
the
blame the Indian
is,
restaurant.
I see what's happening. This is the other fan theory. He doesn't have food poisoning. It's just that the stress of the realization of what he has to do and Pussy's betrayal is manifesting in these physical symptoms for him, which I mean is not unprecedented with Tony. You know, his anxiety and depression manifest in panic attacks all the time. So I don't know if I buy that, but that's like the other.
We can all agree it wasn't the zucchini flowers.
not the those look those were looking pretty
those
good
looked
though.
Fantastic.
Those look really good. Yeah, I wanted to eat those.
Yeah. But yeah, one thing, the episode opened with, I'm pretty sure, was the first
time. Sorry to interrupt, Paul. I also wanted to eat the zucchini flower.
Thank you.
Good, yes. Good.
I just felt like curious.
Listeners.
Kind of hung out to dry there.
Right. Sorry. I'll check in with you more often, especially
Sean,
on the food discussions.
Did you text Adam Scott yet? Or
he doesn't want to hear from me. I don't think he likes me very much, but I do have his number on my phone, was my point.
Great.
So I was see if he wants saying, I could give you that.
All right. If it strikes you, if the feeling strikes you, please.
We'll take his number and then just call him while we're doing a podcast when we don't have a guest and we need one like immediately.
That could be interesting. Perfect. You know,
it could be.
He was on an HBO show, the one with the dick where the dicks they jerk off.
Oh, he's Bound and Down.
Yep.
Was he in that?
No. It's it was called like Real Love or something like that.
Oh, and there was,
like,
I remember of, like, that. That was an old one. Yeah.
Oh yeah, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so he's got to have some stories.
Well, he's probably in, you know, walking by Jim getting off the hallway going, hey, I'm going to go have a pump, like do a false ejaculate from this like prop dick they gave me. And then they'd be going, hey, same here.
Oh, there he goes. That's real true. Love. Oh, there he goes. The real love guy.
Oh yeah, opening scene. Was this the first time that Tony and Livia had a scene together this season after like the clash at the end of season one?
No, remember she laughs at him in the last episode. She remember, comes like
yeah, he trips yes. the when the gun falls out.
Oh yes, that's right. That was the first time. Okay,
yeah,
right. But so now they're meeting with her.
But this was the last time.
Because yes, so because Janice obviously skipped town after she shot Richie, and now Livia has nowhere to go, and so Barbara calls to like arrange Livia's living situation, and that's when Tony gets fed up and gives her like the airline tickets, which like every time I see that I'm like, so because that was supposed to be the big plot for season three was Livia testifying against her son in the stolen airline tickets case,
right?
But that didn't happen.
No, it didn't. And then we ended up with a Jackie Jr. storyline, like prevalent season. But yeah. I'm going on a list here.
Did you guys read the book Difficult Men?
No.
No, what's that?
It's really good. So it's I want to get the author's name. It's Brett something. But anyway, he basically does this dissection of like prestige TV. Mostly starting with The Sopranos and like from inside the writer's room. So he gives you this whole like biography of David Chase and like his career up to that point and like, you know, how he wrote sort of the weirdest, most like esoteric episode of Rockford Files. And then he took over Northern Exposure and he fucking hated it. And then like, all these other writers who work with him remembered these like insane stories he would tell about his mother and how overbearing his real life mother was and how fucked up their relationship was, and that's really the seed of like The Soprano, like that's like the core of what it was. But and they talk about his process and a lot of the other writers in the room, and some of them were like real mobster guys like Renzulli or whoever, like that.
Yeah, we
also like how they would get, you know, some of them got fired or got mad or who he picked his favorites and the way it operated and what different people contributed. But it's worth a read because it's just a great book because they do also
this is the one,
Deadwood, 6 Feet Under, Mad Men,
Breaking Bad.
Yep, they do Breaking Bad, and so it's like it's very very good and to hear that it's kind of like how the whole era was like always focused on a central male protagonist who was like a fucking asshole in some way and that most of the show creators also were although I guess like Vince Gilligan rules, and then 6 Feet Under is like everybody's favorite job they ever had, like Alan Ball is just supposed to be a dream like for the most part it's like David Milch and all these other people, like it sounds like they're so fucked up and it like is how they create these characters in such a specific way, but it's sort of how like these guys defined the era with these characters who defined the era. Right. It's good.
Nice. Difficult Man. That sounds that's yeah, really,
yeah.
Gully, that sounds like right up your alley.
I'll pick that up. Thanks for the tip. So why do you guys think that, like, so why do you think that Tony is just now in this episode and in sort of like, yeah, at Vesuvio's, I don't know if you caught, he's giving Puss like this kind of like look as Puss is like describing how the whole calling card thing, the scam goes down. What is it about like right now, this moment in the plot that elicits this, these fever dreams and Tony's realization? What do you think?
I got the impression that like maybe they wouldn't just always just bust into like an intricate description of the hustle they were doing. Like like maybe like with all these fucking people around, like Pussy normally would just be like, oh, I'll tell you later. It's beautiful, you know, or something. Like
right.
He goes down each like point of like how the hustle works.
Right.
And Tony, and I, you know, right.
Yeah. He's really descriptive of like they generally just don't do that.
Which we later find out like makes sense. Cause he was recording himself. So like,
right. Was he wired that night at the restaurant?
Yeah.
Probably.
Then he sees,
seems like he's wired.
Afterwards.
Like, yeah.
He's getting over tapes to, yeah.
Yeah. And I think Tony's sort of known since the end of season one. Like even in the season opener this season when they're like grilling, there's that like weird like slow mo moment where he like looks up at Puss and it's
right
and like the sound cuts out and so he's kind of like they kind of planted it early on in the season that Tony already knows and he has known and it's like when he sees
Feech like not laughing at his joke, you know, when they pan across everybody and like Pauly and like Syl are like losing their minds at the joke and like Feech is like rubbing his hands like pissed off. Like it's that same thing. It's like it's like how we always know he's decided like somebody needs to disappear in some way or another.
Yeah. Did you guys have a favorite like dream moment? There's like so many good visuals, so much good stuff.
Yeah.
They're in Asbury Park, which I've been to a bunch of times. Like that used to be where my parents lived. So like I do like that
nice place.
That's, like, that sequence is beautifully shot, like with the snow coming down and like it's really, and like with the reveal that it's like Philly instead of Patsy and all that, like that's very very well shot.
Yeah, that's Asbury Park, and that's a nice boardwalk, and there's like an arcade in the back, like an old arcade, that building in the background. You see this? I think it's in The Wrestler too. It's like I don't know, used a lot. I think
that's the first time
I just
time we
like
see,
that. I just really like that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The beach. It's and I like the beach. Landscape. I went to the beach yesterday.
Oh, for real?
Oh, yeah. Dude, tell us more about that.
How was your beach day, Joey?
This is pretty fun. You ever been to Leo Carrillo Beach in Malibu? You could take your dog there. It's pretty great.
Oh, shit.
Was there like the ocean was there? And
it was freezing. It was like 60 degrees.
Whoa.
That's nice, actually.
That's called.
Yeah.
Should go today.
Great. I'm gonna cut all this out. Cool.
But in that sequence, that's the first time we see Patsy Parisi after his twin brother was killed off in the season opener. And it's such a weird, sort of like confusing thing where they introed character who's gonna be around till the end of the series now in Tony's dream as the twin brother of the guy who Tony shot 13 episodes ago. Odd choice, David Chase, but
that's dreams, man. They don't make sense.
Well, I was reading in the Soprano sessions that the reason they did that was after Dan Grimaldi, the guy who plays Patsy in Philly, got killed off in episode one. Chase was like, this guy's too good. We got to bring him back. He's like, you only get one twin brother excuse per TV series, and we're using it on Dan Grimaldi.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Hey, what an honor.
I mean, he's great.
He's great.
Yeah.
This was also... Oh, go ahead.
No, I just, you asked what... our favorite dream sequence thing was.
Yeah.
I guess in watching again, they actually did trick me when then it cuts to him in the therapist's office and he's going like, I had this fucking super crazy dream. And you're like, oh, okay, now we're out of it. And then that becomes a dream as well. This got me.
Yeah. You hate to admit it because that device is so often used where it's like, oh, like, you know.
Of course they're going to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
But they did it well. And then because they play it so straight, they have him, they show him like waking up, like Carm like wakes him up and then he, you know, goes in. And then you don't know until the camera goes back on Melfi and it's, what's her name? Annalisa, the mob boss from Italy.
They've done that before. Didn't they do that like at I don't know, a dream sequence in season one. I'm trying to remember, but I feel like they've done it a bunch of times.
Yeah.
That they, sort of thing where they cut to something and then you're like, oh, we're still in the dream.
Oh yeah. I don't remember, but they definitely had like Mel, like he spun Melfi's chair around and it was like his mother in a wig.
Oh yeah.
And then like, what time is it? Like that whole thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like musical sequence.
Joey, do you have a favorite?
Hmm?
Do you have a favorite dream moment?
I said the beach.
Oh, okay. Just the beach.
Yeah, Asbury Park. Yeah. Asbury Park.
I just like this scene. Like Dave said, it's beautifully shot and it's sure. like, I don't know. I just like nostalgic for that.
And then I do love off. Like, they like go to the shot of like Paulie and Syl and then like it cuts back and like we see like the reverse shot is Gigi shining Philly's shoes.
Right. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, because he killed him.
Because he fucking he shot him.
Right.
Because he's shining his shoes now, but he killed him.
Yeah.
The one thing that was weird was like that one where like I think it's a dream where he comes in, he's like, well, I might as well tell you, I bought a boat today. And Carmel and Meadow's like, and I'm going to Columbia. That's a dream, right?
I think so, because he wakes up, he's in the car. Yes.
But it's grounded compared to everything else. And then also, Meadow actually does end up going to Columbia. So is he just like remembering this already happening? Or like, I don't know. That always,
or is he predicting it? Or he,
Kind of confused me. But,
well, it must have been one of her choices that, like, she wanted to go to school to, you know, like that she had talked about.
Right. Yeah, they, like, mentioned it before, yeah.
Right. I love Silvio giving his classic, our true enemy has yet to reveal himself, Godfather line. And I think he's actually wearing, like, Michael Corleone, like, wardrobe in that. Am I wrong?
I don't know. Yeah.
Interesting.
Maybe.
I didn't notice it.
You think or you know?
I don't know. It looked like it wasn't normal Silvio clothes.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. I look normal to me, dude.
We don't know.
Look normal know. Italian wise guy clothes, dude.
No, it definitely was not.
Hey,
it was like a sweater, like a button up, like sweater vest type thing. Hey. He had like glasses on like string.
Oh, actually, yeah. Now that I think about it, actually, that's a good point.
Also, Tony, like, looking through the, like, what's it called? Viewfinder thing into, like, the train station and shooting Paulie.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, in the dream sequence, he's, like, talking to Melfi. And he's, like, you know, the guy annoys me. He writes up letters every Christmas about who accomplished what. That does not sound like Paulie to me.
He's always humming to himself.
That sounds like it.
That sounds like it.
I mean, but then, like, you know, like, seasons down the line, like, we get Remember when, like, that kind of comes, you know, the kind of peaks and like he's very close to, or what feels like he's very close to actually killing him.
Right.
Oh,
it's boiled up.
That's true.
So he clearly has issues like with like how annoying he is, despite his loyalty to him.
Right. Yeah. Him and Paulie always have issues.
Yeah.
That's a great character, and it's a cool like other piece of his subconscious that's happening in his dream. Like it's like there's the stuff where like the big pussy realization and all this other shit. That it's just like also this guy who I have to hang out with all the time is driving me fucking crazy, and I can't snap on him. But like I need to get it out somehow, and he's just like offloading that.
Right.
From his psyche. It's just a great little extra thing of like, oh, and this dude's driving me nuts. And Paulie's perfectly cast as like, you believe that he would be like a good worker, like a good earner and a good employee and a very loyal guy who you would like, you know, totally trust with your stuff, who would also be like, this fucking dude.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because it's
shut
like,
up, man.
Because it's like his dad's friend. It's like you have to always hang out with your dad's friend all the time. Like,
yeah.
Oh, he's always listening. He's always humming fucking Paul Anka. Fucking guy.
He'd definitely be coming up with like a lot of like theories on why you shouldn't be wearing a mask or something like that.
Yeah.
He'd be bringing him up all the time.
And then so we get to the infamous boat scene. like, is there a more heart-wrenching moment in the show? I mean, maybe when Adriana kills, but I can't think of anything that comes close to that for me. What do you guys think?
For me, Blue Comet, still, like, when Bobby gets killed is still
the hardest
for me to watch. Just because, like, he's not killed, but I mean, I guess what makes this most heartbreaking is that it's Tony and the guys that do it,
right?
And not some hitmen.
I like it because I think it's well acted. I think it's pretty well acted
for
like a guy who, you know, isn't like a guy who acts like a lot, Vinny Pastore,
right?
And I also like it. I think I probably watched this episode first out of all of them. And then,
wait, this is the first episode you ever saw?
Probably, because I started watching them on like a VHS in college. Yeah. And then I know for a fact I started like season 3 live, but I like think someone showed me this and then I rewatched everything from there. So I guess I like this episode because or maybe it's just the one I remember like watching on VHS.
It's definitely a huge turning point in the show that everyone references.
Yeah,
like when they killed Big Pussy was like, it's sort of like, it's just an enormous move that it almost feels like they had planned to build up to from the beginning of like, well, we know like, you know, like they're writing the pilot going like, oh, we know the end of season 2 is we're going to kill one of his best friends for being a rat. Like, and so it's, you know, it's so well like laid in there. And that scene on the boat when he starts like frantically taking tequila shots, he like breaks the tension and like gets Tony to laugh and it's like, we're still friends, you know?
Right.
But then he's fucking pouring them so fat and it's just like, it feels really real and good. It's very well acted. Yeah. There's so much tension to it.
Yeah.
But it also is kind of like fun and funny. Right. And it's.
That's The Sopranos at its best. Yeah.
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 The line like, Puss, did she even ever exist? Like, that's always.
Yeah. Puts a fine point on it.
And that's when you know, like, it's happening. It's going to happen now.
Right. Yeah, they didn't take him out on a boat to return with him. So
not in the face. Can you do that?
Yeah, they do give him that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they throw him in the ocean.
True. Yeah, and it didn't even matter because he gets thrown in the ocean.
He's not gonna be a fool. Yeah.
I mean, what did he think they were gonna do? They were gonna like bring him back to like his wife and be like, oh,
he got shot on the way.
He got shot a bunch.
He fell on bullets.
I think so he had the Papa Doms, he had the Vindaloo.
Yeah, Artie's trying to absolve himself.
And then Artie shot him. I don't know. My friend Ryan Hemphill knows Vinny Pastore.
Of course he does.
You know Ryan, Dave. I think Clemens, you've met him before too.
I've certainly met Ryan Hemphill.
he's a scumbag. We should have him on the podcast. He's a great.
Tell me he knows anyone, and I'd be like, okay.
That's great.
Hung out with Vinny Pastore a bunch. He has. Anyway, want to let everyone know that
that your friend knows Vinny Pastore.
Yeah, listeners, this guy you don't know hangs out with Vinny Pastore.
That my really interesting friend that Sean and Dave have met know that he's hung out with.
I talked to him for a very long time at the strip club at your bachelor party.
Yeah.
I always misremember that like Pussy getting killed isn't the very end of this episode because there's like a lot of shit that happens afterwards. Like Livia getting picked up at the airport by like the feds.
Tony gets arrested.
Tony getting arrested in front of Meadow, which is like just like you gotta feel so embarrassed for her. Like that, how traumatizing. Tough, They're the worst parents.
He threatens to not send any more deli trays to the FBI. That was that's huge uncalled platform. For.
Yeah.
Uncalled for.
I love how like stolen airline tickets, they're like, yeah, I know, it's not a big deal. It's 23 stolen. That's like half a plane of stolen airline tickets. also, it's just so bizarre to me that they're actual just like physical things that you could pass off to people like that for whatever. But
right.
You know who kind of gets like a little bit of a happy ending is Davey Scatino. Am I reading that wrong? Like, yes, his life is ruined, but he's like...
He like fucked his son over so bad. Like, sure.
Yeah, but there's something like a little bit like...
He can't get coffee out of the coffee maker. I mean,
yeah, I thought that was a nice touch.
Of course.
I did think it was a nice touch that he's like, you know, Vegas is, you know, a short plane ride. Like, you should come out like to Vegas. And like, eventually Tony does do that. Like, when he has to clear his head in the later episode.
Yeah. But it just seemed to me that they were playing it. Like he's got a glint of like hope in his eyes that he didn't have, four episodes ago or whatever.
Right.
But not a lot of people get out of Jersey in this show. So
that's true.
I think it's kind of, it could have been worse.
Yeah.
And then Joey, I know you love the end montage with, the through and through playing.
Oh yeah. It's my favorite song in the show. Other than our theme song as well,
of course.
But
only Stones or Stones adjacent songs allowed on this.
Only
pod.
Stones or Faces, dude.
Yeah, that's right.
That's how we rock. You know it. And if you don't like it, you can get out.
What are we even talking about?
All right, I'm gonna sign off here.
That would be fair. I so closely associate the song with like the ending montage. Like it's such one of the more vivid uses of music.
And I love we're just like ducking in on all the little like shitty things that the mob has running, like the adult films and
all the money makers,
the motel. The guy's like,
yeah. What
out,
was
like,
was that just a reference to the motel? Like I didn't know if that was a reference to anything specific, like the guy with the cigarette just passing out there.
No, well, I think it's just to show that it's like gone like down the drain, that whole business, like the type of clientele that have been let in there.
And like the dichotomy of like these like shady, shitty businesses and the suburban, like
nice graduation party.
Yeah. That's all the shit that's paid for this graduation party.
Everyone taking pictures, Sills smoking cigarettes in the house.
Yeah. Everybody's smoking in the house so much.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and like Puss's house too. It's just fucking disgusting.
Yeah,
is Tony smoking a cigar in the Indian restaurant?
Like, oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, Jesus, 2000.
It's a different time, guys.
Yes, indeed.
Why people thought Y2K was coming? You know, I mean,
you had to smoke them while you got them. You know, right. We thought the whole fucking grid was going down.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it is interesting. Like the calling card scheme and all that stuff is like. What the mob, like what crime they're actually involved in and like how like shitty and petty so much of it is.
Right.
It's just these little quick cash schemes, but there's just a bunch of them operating.
Oh yeah.
I used to do this improv show where we would interview somebody about the worst job they've ever had. And and one of the jobs, I can't remember exactly what they did, but I remember that they weren't like an FBI agent, but somehow they had like listened to a bunch of like mafia wiretaps and they were like, they were involved in some, you know, something where I don't know if it was for like research or whatever, but they were like, it's so fucking depressing when you actually hear like the real mobsters and what they do and what, because in the movies, it's so like, they're like gangsters and it's very glamorous. And it's like, this guy's got to get whacked. And so much of it's like they're just barely subsisting off these like scraps of like they're upselling produce or something. Like it's just it's some like really shitty scam where it's like we have 100 calling cards, we sell them for $7 more, and then we get it cut off, and the phone company doesn't get paid, so then they don't. It's like this sucks. Like not cool at all.
Yeah.
It's like the coolers a couple episodes.
Yeah, the coolers. I was going to say, like earlier in the season, they're like, oh, dude, we're going to get all these fucking coolers. And we're going to make at least a buck off of each of these. It's going to be fucking beautiful.
Yeah, and that they're dumb, too. Like, it's like you think of them as a sophisticated organization. They're like, you just listen. It's like these guys are all so fucking stupid. And they're like scraping by with just off the legal like way of doing shit. And it's pretty... like disillusioned or disheartened.
I always remember, I forget what season it's in, but there's a scene where like you come in on Polly Walnuts and he's clipping coupons out of the newspaper. Like this is your like glamorous mob life that the viewers want. But yeah, any other thoughts about the ep, the season?
I mean, it's I know this is one of Spells' favorite episodes. This has to be up there for me. Sean is right. Like this whole season sets the rest of the series in motion, but this episode in particular is really.
Yeah, it sort of feels like it starts to get darker, right? Like after this season, yeah, and probably Puss being killed off was the catalyst for that.
Yeah.
But
one thing I realized in rewatching that I just like, I guess not forgotten, but like, you know, it is sort of this first like big prestige television show. Like it, you know, was like the beginning of this new era of these kind of like more highbrow, like TV's better than movies kind of shows. But it is also corny in a way that I like didn't recall, like all the fucking fart noises from the bathroom and when he's got food, but you're just like, they're like blowing seeds on like transitioning over like a loud fart noise and just AJ being like, who's ripping big ones in there? And I was like, oh God. Like I mean, and obviously I know it was a highbrow show about kind of like lowbrow guys, right. But I didn't recall quite how much they leaned into some of that stuff. Yes. And it was surprising.
Yeah.
Not surprising that AJ was involved in that, because oftentimes the corniest stuff, like AJ and his friends, like,
oh yeah.
AJ is often at the center of the corniest parts of the show.
This is true.
Where has he been? Where's Robert Eiler? You should get him to come up.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true. He like every other cast member is like doing their own podcast now. Yeah, and Jamie Lynn Sigler.
Oh, that's right.
They don't do it like us. Hey, you may have been on the show, but yeah, you're not three washed fucking losers. So good luck. Good luck establishing your brand.
Yeah. You fucking idiots.
Yeah.
All right.
What is it?
Nobody's
it
called like you guys. We're on a hit show. Ever heard of fucking The Underdog?
I think it's called like Pajama Party or something like that.
Yeah, it's got a weird name.
But
yeah, go check out Pajama Party.
Yeah, by all means, please enjoy. Enjoy. No, Rob, I actually have a Robert Eiler story that these guys have heard before. But in college, I was on the Upper East Side, like in front of the bar, the Big Easy, which was known for like being one of the scummier bars in New York. And we were out front, and he like showed up and like drank with us all night and seemed to not be enjoying himself so much.
Shocker.
But he was nice.
Have you guys talked to New Haven actor Bruce Altman at all on here?
We haven't. We can reach out to Bruce Altman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in later on, but he's in there and
yeah, Whitecaps.
I didn't know he was a Connecticut boy.
He was like centered out of New Haven. Like I would see him, he came into the dry cleaner that I used to work at. Oh, wow. And I think he and his wife lived in New Haven like full time, and then he would like go in for a lot of New York acting jobs, and if he booked something in LA, but he was established enough, I think, that he could kind of send tapes or whatever.
Probably did some stuff at Long Wharf Theater, I would imagine.
Yeah, did Long Wharf Theater, I'm sure. And then his big story that I remember him telling when I wanted to talk to him about being an actor was I knew him mostly from Rookie of the Year, and he was very proud of the fact that he had pitched that his character, who's kind of this asshole stepdad, and he's like a big guy. He's like 6'3", 6'4", 200 something pounds. He pitched that he should drive a Miata. So like every time you see him, and they would shoot him pulling up to the house to like come into the, and he would have to get out, and he's just too big for the car to have to get out. It was obviously like the fanciest, like coolest car he could afford, but it's so too small for him, but it looked sporty and cool. And so he's just like in this Mazda Miata, and it was a great character detail, I think, that was actually pretty funny in the movie. And he was like, yeah, I told the director to do that.
That's great.
Get me a Miata.
Great. Folks, sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week. It kicked off this week, last week. It's already kicked off. And there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. On the entertainment side, Floyd Money Mayweather joins the BetOnline team to bring you a brand new segment, The Ice is Right. Floyd talks about all of his jewelry and gives you the chance to bet on the cost of his bling to win some great prizes.
Oh, shit.
Joe is already betting on it as we speak. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE, one word. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
That was really awesome. That was really good, man.
Lovely, man.
Oh, thanks.
That was like the best one, I feel
like,
you've like, ever
the
done.
The ad read hasn't changed in a year, so.
You've got to memorize.
It's always the same thing.
Always the same thing, only they added Floyd Money Mayweather. You got to bet on his. It Sean, sounds... would you bet on Floyd Money Mayweather's bling? Would you bet on that? Or
would I bet on his bling?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understand the question, dude.
Would you bet on it?
Would you bet on it?
Yes or no?
Would I bet on his bling? I would have to say, because I don't feel that I have enough information to make a wise wager, that I would not bet on his bling.
Good choice.
Well, it's 2020, so just, you know, if you want me to cut that out, just let me know.
All right.
Now for something obscene.
This is for the fans, because the fans are craving this.
The fans did ask for this again.
You know, and they often do. This is when I do it. When someone's like, "Where's Johnny the Nut? Where's that segment?" I'll be like, "Okay, I will." I will get Johnny to break out the laptop and start writing, a erotic fan fiction. So. Did he send it to you guys? Did you open it up?
I have it open, yeah.
I have it open.
Okay. Let me get him. Hey, don't I don't. All right.
Oh, you're so good.
Whoa. How do you get the Zoom link?
Oh, I hacked into the email.
Oh, fuck.
I'm going to do a little hacking. All right. Wow. So this one is called Johnny the Nut. How about you fuck my big pussy by Johnny the Nut Zagpino. Dave, you play Skip. Paul.
Cool. Yep.
You play. Fuck, where'd it go? You play Tony.
Okay.
And Sean, why don't you play pussy?
Okay.
You got
I'm
it?
Reading old. Yeah.
Don't
we
worry
all,
about
we all
it.
Are, that's, yeah. None of us have seen this besides...
That's how you do it. That's how Johnny the Nut likes it.
All right.
And I will do what I do.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Interior. The Bing. Day. Light rain. Johnny the Nut. Pussy. One of life's great mysteries. But not to me, Johnny the Nut. Specifically, Big Pussy. Sometimes people are turned off by Big Pussy. But not me. I love Big Pussy. Anyway, let's do the scene. Big Pussy enters the Bing with Skip from the FBI.
I shouldn't bring you here. What if Tony finds out?
Fuck Tony. What'd he ever do for you? Come on. I need to sniff the stripper's locker room. Locker room?
Yeah, locker room.
Okay. I need to sniff the stripper's locker room. You know I have my perversions.
Yeah, it weirds me out.
Puss, if you don't let me quench my irresistible desire for sniffing strippers' is it locker rooms or is it locker rooms?
Locker rooms.
If you don't let me quench my irresistible desire for sniffing strippers' locker rooms, I'll take you into custody right now.
Okay. Okay.
Puss and Skip walk into the strippers' locker room at the Bing.
Oof, Maron, smell that female sweat. Can I have these?
Skip gestures to a pair of stripper boots.
Yeah, sure. The fuck I care.
Can I have these nipple tassels too?
The fuck are you gonna do with those?
Oh, baby. All these stripper clothes. All these stripper clothes is turning me on. Puss, you ever have desires for another man?
Get the fuck out of here. Of course.
Come here and give me that big sausage and pepper man pussy that is your asshole.
Yep, and puss, fuck. Johnny the Nut interrupts. Hey, it's 2020. Man gotta fuck other men too sometimes, all right? I quickly exit.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe I'm doing this. I hope no one finds out.
All of a sudden, Tony Soprano, the man himself, wakes up.
The fuck are you two doing?
Tony, what are you doing in the locker room?
I fell asleep here after doing coke all night and fucking one of the strippers.
Oh, yeah, right. You do that sometimes.
Hey, Tone.
Who are you?
He's my lover, Tone.
Yeah, that's me.
Puss, you like men?
Yeah.
Hey, so do I.
This I gotta tell the Bureau.
What Bureau?
The Federal Bureau of Fucking.
They are all like, whatever, they fuck, they finish. And then they all slam a deli tray together. Hey, remember, wear a mask, not a condom. Johnny out.
Oh, I like the message. Great message.
It was, yeah.
He tried to have a message at the end.
Socially conscious. Yeah.
That I liked that. I loved seeing that your writing style hasn't changed. You know, we worked together for a long time. We were on sketch teams together at UCB. We did a little video series, and I can always rely on your script to have some words that are not consistent from a sentence to the next, some words with extra letters, and just a very laissez-faire style, right? Mm-hmm. Takes all the pressure off me, the reader, to like really follow it.
Oh yeah, does it seem like it was written like really fast and in front of the television?
I remember you getting a note once on the sketch team that when Joe Wanger just like, we read a script of yours, we stopped, we were about to go into notes, and Wanger just went, Joe, go home and write this script like you're sober.
It's a good note. It's a good note.
It's as though you just started typing and never looked at a word that you put on the page.
Yeah, I mean,
you don't look back.
That's Johnny the Nut.
I enjoyed it thoroughly.
That's how he operates.
I would argue that was the best Johnny the Nut I've read on this podcast.
Yeah, usually Johnny the Nut breaks the third wall and enters like at the end, but you have him leading up top here, man. He's just coming in.
You know, he's sort of like the narrator now. He's guiding you through this journey.
No, I felt really comfortable. I had somebody sort of holding my hand and as an outside scene, I felt like I was, that I had a knowing guide who was going to help me.
Right.
And then when he left, I really had my feet under me, and I could sort of like enjoy the sandbox that Johnny the Nut had created.
Hey man, sure. It was a great performance, I gotta say.
Yeah,
so Sean, that's exactly what I was going for.
Sean, do you know anybody that might be interested in purchasing this material or
in buying it?
Yeah.
Adam Scott, perhaps.
You know a lot of showrunners. I mean, there's got to be somebody that might be interested in art.
Yeah, you know what? I'll put out some feelers. I mean, like, it's a weird time just because productions are sort of shut down.
Sure. COVID-19.
Otherwise,
you know, for something like this, I would recommend probably you film a sizzle and just get it up on its feet so that people can picture, because it's on the page. I get it, but it might not translate as mm-hmm. well as mm-hmm. if you had something visual to show people. But yeah, I mean, I can send it around. It's just, it's all timing because like if it was animated, maybe they could start working on it.
Oh, I know. Sure. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So animate it real quick.
Well, if it's animated, then, you know, the butts and dicks and so forth could be as big and crazy as you want. That's, you know?
Yeah.
It's important.
Very good note.
To the vision.
Excellent note. Excellent note.
Oh, okay. That's the next realm Johnny the Nut will get into.
Yeah, maybe our listeners, maybe we can start like a Kickstarter or something, get some funding for the sizzle.
Yeah.
But, or animate it yourself if you want. Feel free, and just like we'll put our names on it.
Or perhaps Bet Online would like to fund it themselves. I mean,
it's a perfect commercial for.
If it's animated, here's something you could do that you can't do in live action, which is like when Pussy finally busts, he could pull out and shoot all over the mirror, and it could spell out "I'm a rat," and then Tony could be like, "What does that say?" And he could have to like smear the mirror real fast.
This writes itself.
Wipe out the word. So just like stuff like that you can play with. It's a cool world.
Okay. Joe, you're not writing this down.
Oh, it's all up here. I'm gonna relay it to Johnny the Nut and he will translate it on his own.
All right, please do. Please do. All right. Do we want to move on to
we'll only do a couple of these fucking internet questions. Of course, this is the segment where we source questions, comments, observations from around the internet on what people are talking about for this episode, Funhouse. First one off of Reddit from user Lugan. Did Big Pussy have a fighting chance? If he boards the boat strapped, does Puss have any chance of survival? Watching the scene when Tony and Syl are at the stern, and I'm wondering if Puss could have taken an armed Polly who seemed like he was lost in the moment. With Polly down, Puss could have taken cover behind the bar and used his piece as well as Polly's to have a shootout with Tony and Syl. Just a thought.
Syl purposely watches him get dressed.
Yeah.
That would not have happened.
He couldn't have gotten the gun.
He couldn't have had a piece on him.
Right. He's saying if he did.
If he did, there's no way.
there's
no way he could have had a gun big enough to kill them fast enough. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there wouldn't be a show, you know, if he did that.
Yeah.
Right. But the show is really Tony's like one of the main guys.
That I imagine was like the secret series finale. Not happening.
He wouldn't have done it. Like they would have killed the Paulie would have shot him.
Also, all this gunfire like below deck on a boat doesn't seem smart when you think about it.
I was worried about that even with them doing. I was like, why are you gonna put a hole in the boat?
Yeah.
Easily could happen.
Also, we've also seen like how Pussy functions when he's trying to be like undercover, and he like fucking hits somebody with his car. So I don't think he's smooth enough to pull off shooting them.
Right.
No.
Yeah. He's not murdering all three of them and then taking the boat back to safety and living his life. No.
But none of them are particularly smooth with like, you know, killing people. They just like will waste bullets on someone who's already dead, you know. That's what they like to do.
Yeah. This one from user DJ Vic Brown. They visit Pussy at home, take him to the boat, then kill him. Does that mean Angie knows Pussy has been killed by the family? And again, we sort of touched on it, but like really, could it be more like the last time she sees him, she's leaving with Tony and Silvio to go check out a boat. Like, does she really is there any question in her mind? But then we see her at the graduation ceremony and she's like, she's pissed complaining that about he's not there.
She figures it out later.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, you
know,
I guess,
and can't really do anything. You know, she's hopeless.
Puss has disappeared suddenly before and come back. So, yeah.
Also, like, I think like there's some semblance of relief because like he's a dark cloud over her. Not that her life gets so much better like once he's gone, but like they are in a joyless marriage. He like sleeps downstairs most of the time.
Right.
That, I mean,
yeah. I think they set up earlier in the season. It's sort of like, she had that sinking feeling in her stomach when he did come home. So it's must be some sort of relief that he's not around in some respect. This one was directed on Twitter to Steve Van Zandt. He didn't field this one. So why don't we take it from at the Sprocket Man. I'm watching Sopranos for like the 20th time and I've just finished Funhouse. Can you shed any light on the moment Silvio leaves the cabin and Tony follows him and shouts at him? Always found it a little bizarre. What do you guys think?
I guess I don't know what's bizarre. Like, it feels like he's
is
overwhelmed and stressed out by the situation. Right. Like, you're seeing it's sort of a window in like seeing another one of these mobsters who are sometimes a little bit two-dimensional compared to Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Have the like real like human feelings and emotions. Like, they're all kind of like, this guy was a brother to them, and right, they're gonna have to kill him. And he's like, I'm seasick. And, which I don't doubt he felt nauseous, but then Tony's like, I'm so fucking sick.
Yeah, right.
Like, it just like is a bummer. Like, if you're like really hurt, and then somebody's like, yeah, actually my leg's been bothering me too, and you're like, my leg's broken. Like, it's like sort of that thing.
Yeah,
which I did think was cool. I have another little thought about that with them killing him, is like, just another tidbit from Difficult Men, is that they had a real battle over that college episode, and that it was the only time that HBO like really swung in and was like, we cannot do this. We cannot have the hero of our show kill a person and still like be like rooting for them. And they, right, and it was this big fight. And I think you said like the show kind of gets darker after this episode, and it feels like obviously they did it.
Right.
It was insanely like critically acclaimed. Like, David Chase just put his fucking foot down, and people were like, no, we like this anti-hero.
Right.
But they were going, no one had ever done that before on television. Like, the fucking lead had never actually been a bad guy who like killed someone who you hadn't seen do anything wrong.
Right. Right.
And then you just keep going with them. And then here they are killing this guy who like you actually like, right, you know, through the show. And then from that point on, it's just like, it gets really, I think they had, you know, carte blanche to just go like as fucked up as they wanted with these guys.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That's a good thought. This one from Twitter, Ashley Bastock 42. She originally tweeted, what's the most stressful episode of television you've ever sat through? She said, I tweeted this as I was watching The Sopranos Blue Comet. It's a close call between like three other episodes in that series for the most stressful ep: Funhouse, Long-Term Parking, Made in America. But upon countless rewatches, I maintain this Blue Comet is the most stressful. What do you guys have a stressful episode of Sopranos or just TV in general that comes to mind?
The first thing that came to mind is, for me, is that episode of Breaking Bad. What was it called? Was it called Ozymandias?
Ozymandias, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean, yes.
Yeah. One of the greatest episodes of television, I think.
It'd have to be an episode that you like. Well, it doesn't have to be, but it makes it better if it's something that you watch live, I guess, like Breaking Bad.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, that was my first thought go to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every episode of 24.
Fucking clock is ticking down, man.
Oh shit, yeah.
We've been rewatching it, and I like and my wife was just like, every episode of this show would be the most exciting episode of any other show you've ever seen. Like, he's like breaking someone out of prison, like while his daughter is being kidnapped, and then like killing his partner, like every fucking episode.
Yeah, Kiefer.
But because of that, I think the single episodes don't have the impact that they do on something like this, where it's like you're so invested.
Right.
Yeah. There's also I'm obsessed with Homicide: Life on the Street, and there's an episode in the later seasons with Vincent D'Onofrio, and his character has been pushed like onto the subway tracks, and he's caught in like between the track or between like the whatchamacallit, like where people are standing, the like subway platform and the train. And as soon as the train moves, he's dead. So like he's, in all essence, he's dead. It's basically like mostly just an episode between Vincent D'Onofrio and Andre Brower. And Andre Brower is like just talking him through it. That's probably up there.
Yeah. Sounds pretty intense.
What about you, Paul?
I mean, I'm obviously like, I think Long-Term Parking was like,
oh yeah,
just the whole, like, I remember watching that live, and just the scene where Adriana finally comes clean to Christopher, and first he starts beating her, and then they just sort of like cry together, like fuck, man. Like I was, that ruined me for a bit. But that's probably my answer.
Good answer. Watch
Ozark if you like stressful television.
Oh yeah.
Wait, what show?
Good call.
Ozark.
Oh yes, I've seen the first season.
It's inescapable. Like every time a problem is even like slightly like halfway solved, another bigger problem shows for them in a way where I was just like, are we going to take a little break ever? Like,
it's fucking nuts. There's no filler episode. That's because I heard season two was okay. And then I heard the third season was great. So
season three was. I'm on season two now, but I've been told season three is like a perfect season of television. Yeah. So a little bit.
It's
I'm
very
like,
good.
Yeah.
It's very good.
It's not bad, but it's like, you know,
yeah,
it feels a little samey. Like I said, like it's just like, oh, now this is a bad guy. And it, like,
right.
Sure. But I hear season three is amazing, and I like it generally anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, check it out. And then just end it with a thought from @DaveCuddle on Twitter. The Sopranos Funhouse is probably the only episode of any drama where the lead character won an Emmy and also spent a lot of the episodes soundtracked with comedy fart noises. So we were right to comment on that.
Sure.
That's all I got.
Yeah, we already talked about that.
Yeah, already covered it. Davey Cuddle. Sean, thank you for coming on. Do you have anything you want us to push for you or something you'd like to plug? The Grindr? Should people watch The Grindr again?
on Netflix. I mean, you could listen to my one of my many stupid podcasts. I've got Hollywood Handbook. That one's free. If you want to go to the Patreon for the flagrant ones, where we do a basketball podcast, you could check that out. But otherwise, just stay safe out there.
So true. You know what? All of our other guests are fucking egomaniacs and they just always want to talk about themselves. But you're the first one to really have like a powerful message. So we appreciate that. So thank you. And thanks for coming on. And thank you, listeners, for listening. You can always hit us up at osopranospod@gmail.com and look for us on social media at osopranospod at Twitter. And Instagram.
It's going well.
I mean, until next time.
Oh.